Welcome, everyone. My name is Susan Jenkins, and I'm your host for the Inner Warrior Summit. My vision is that listeners will come away from the summit with a wealth of new tools, techniques, pathways to self-empowerment, and a deeper connection to their true essence. I've gathered together a diverse group of experts with a wide range of perspectives and modalities who will share how they have transformed and empowered themselves in their lives. I am so excited to introduce today's inspiring expert, Dr. Dawson Church. Dr. Church has edited or authored many books, including his award-winning book, The Genie in Your Genes, pioneering the field of epigenetics, in which he explains the remarkable self-healing mechanisms now emerging at the juncture of emotion and gene expression. He applies these breakthroughs to health and athletic performance through EFT Universe, which is his website, which is www.eftuniverse.com, one of the largest alternative medicine sites on the web. And though I could go on quite a lot with his accomplishments, I'll stop there and I will introduce Dr. Church. Welcome, Dr. Church. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, it's so good to be here, and the topic is intriguing. I look forward to our conversation.
Oh, good, yeah. I'm so honored to have you. And I want to begin by asking you to explain to our listeners what epigenetics is in the first place and describe the impact of your recent breakthroughs and findings in this field.
Sure. It is a really fascinating field, and it came out of the whole field of genetics. In the 1950s, Crick and Watson were the two scientists who discovered the double helix structure of the DNA molecule. And this was a really huge breakthrough, and it was actually a fairly intuitive moment when they discovered that. And they realized that that double helix was a good explanation for the properties of DNA. And then we had this explosion of research showing how DNA and the genes control all kinds of properties of the way life takes shape. So the shape of our bodies, the way they function, all of these things, anatomy, physiology, development in the womb, all of these things are driven by genes. But what then happened was that the theory was taken a lot further than originally intended, and this idea of genetic determinism came about, where researchers then began to believe, and the public began to believe, that genes held the answer to everything in life. So it was believed that our musical talent was determined by genes, and things like dyslexia and autism were determined by genes. And while genes are certainly linked to many of these conditions, that theory was taken way, way, way further, and everything about us was thought to be the product of our genes. And if you look at Crick and Watson's original papers and the diagrams they used in them, they had the genes as the source of all information to do with life. What then happened, though, was there were a series of experiments. Some of the earliest ones were done with my friend Bruce Lipton in the 1970s, and they showed that the environment in which the genes are placed affects them. And one obvious example from this, from medical research, which most people know about, is stem cells. Stem cells are like these blank cells. They're like these unformed cells, and they circulate in our bodies. And when we have a wound or when we have an emergency need for them, stem cells can transform themselves into skin cells or nerve cells or blood cells or muscle cells. So there are these shapeshifters, which they can take different shapes. So same genes, but different shapes. And what Bruce Lipton showed in his experiments was that if he put them in a different environment, they could form different kinds of cells. So it wasn't the genes making this happen, it was the environment. That idea was then expanded progressively over the next many years. And in the 1990s, there were some big breakthrough experiments showing that the social environment in which animals develop was important. And one set of studies done by Moshe Schiff at McGill University, he showed that baby rats who are nurtured by their mothers have shifts in the genes that are active in their brains. So nurturing, maternal nurturing, being cared for, being loved, being protected, being cared for as a child affects people's genes and also affects the genes of subsequent generations. And in a later series of experiments, he showed that schizophrenics, people with severe mental illness have all the same genes that normal people have, but those genes are shut off or silenced or suppressed. So certain environmental influences express genes, make them more likely to turn on, or suppress or silence genes, turning them off. And this whole suite of environmental influences produces what we call now epigenetic change. And these epigenetic changes are very, very, very powerful. And in fact, research published in the last couple of months has shown that they can be passed along from mother to her offspring. Even the father has a role in passing along epigenetic changes to the offspring. So that's the new field I'm drawn to, and I've especially been writing about how emotions produce change. So strong emotion, fear, anger, resentment, all of those kinds of strong emotions can literally turn on and off certain classes of genes in your brain, and over time actually shape the way the neural pathways in your brain. You actually reshape your brain over time by doing this. So epigenetics is tremendously important in the way our brains function and also in our behavior.
Oh, that's fascinating. Powerful. Great research. For those who may not have heard of EFT before, Emotional Freedom Technique, could you explain what it is and how you came to use it in your life and your work, please?
Sure. Although one of the funny things, Susan, is that when I would address audiences 10 years ago or so and ask who's heard of EFT, I'd get, you know, at a typical medical conference, a psychology conference, I'd have maybe a quarter of the people raise their hands. Now when I stand up there and talk, it's like three quarters of people raise their hands. It's hard to find people who haven't heard of EFT. So
that's wonderful.
A big change has occurred. We did an analysis a few months ago and found that there are about over 9 million people every month searching for terms like EFT tapping, EFT therapy. So it's a huge global phenomenon. And it's done totally without any kind of backing from, there's no drug company there, there's no big social media guru. It's just word of mouth producing this huge interest in EFT. So I heard about it like most people through word of mouth. I had a psychologist friend who told me about EFT, and I thought he said it was useful for so many different problems his clients had. He was using it for anxiety and depression and PTSD, and I thought that those claims were really far-fetched. I did not believe that one method could be so effective for so many different kinds of problems. But I eventually tried it myself, and lo and behold, it worked for me the very first time. And most people have that experience. They go to our website and download our free mini manual and try it on themselves. Maybe they watch one of our YouTube videos. Maybe there's various ways, entry points to EFT. But there's an old Gnostic saying, and it goes like this. To the person who has had the experience, no explanation is necessary. To the person who has not had the experience, no explanation is possible. And EFT is kind of like that. If you've tried it yourself, usually just one time, like if I'm addressing a room full of psychiatrists, for example, I'll give them a brief explanation of EFT, which is that it combines cognitive therapy and exposure therapy with the stimulation tapping with your fingertips on acupuncture points. And this combination of oriental medicine, acupuncture points, plus cognitive therapies is really effective. But I'll give them just the briefest of explanations and get them tapping, because once you've tapped usually one time, there's hardly anybody who says they felt nothing. Often the person's eyes open wide and it's like, whoa, I can't believe I was able to shift. My migraine headache just went away in the last 30 seconds, or that pain I've been bothered with for the last 6 years suddenly is reduced by half. There are just dramatic shifts usually as a result of this. So I've become more and more interested in this and more and more interested in proving that it's evidence-based. That's why I've done the research in psychology and in medicine to put it on this footing with other evidence-based therapies, because until a therapy is evidence-based, it's very hard to get it into primary care. But once it's evidence-based, then it's possible to bring it into hospitals and conventional therapy settings. So that's been sort of the trajectory of where I've taken EFT.
Right, right. I heard you say somewhere that there's so many people now who are familiar with EFT and using it, you know, finding it on YouTube or using it from many different sources, and that sometimes because the sources aren't really from a clinical EFT standpoint, that sometimes they're not rooted in that, that they may fall short in their full understanding of the technique as you utilize it. Can you explain what you meant by that, if I quoted you correctly?
Yes. What happens is we often find people in our workshops, and often I ask people in our live workshops, what brought you to a live clinical EFT workshop?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is usually something like, I tried it myself, I watched a YouTube video, or I downloaded your free manual from your website, but I got stuck. It seemed to work at first, and it stopped working, or it took me so far but no further. And so what we find is that there is this group of really clearly defined EFT techniques, the 48 clinical EFT techniques. They're really powerful, and they all work together. When you use them in the way they were designed, they work together phenomenally well for most kinds of both physical and emotional symptoms. But if you use half of them, if you only use a few of them, if you aren't trained in them, you'll get some result, but you won't get the full result in that is inherent in the methods. So we try to get people into a live training. We've tried DVD trainings, we've tried web trainings, we've tried virtual trainings, but EFT is a really hands-on method. You are, after all, tapping on 12 acupuncture points. And so learning, see how it's done with demonstrations, with other people, doing it yourself on other people, all of these kinds of hands-on methods give you a really good sense of how to use EFT in a way that just reading a book or watching a video can't do.
Yeah, exactly. I notice for myself what's really helpful is when I, like for setup phrases, when I was trying to do it by myself, I'd like forget, and to have to experience or listen to somebody who's done it a lot, setting up the phrases with people and all of that is very, very helpful to what, you know, to be in the presence of somebody who's very experienced with doing it and the different ways that you can word things and all of that. It's a little hard when you're beginning by yourself trying to remember all of that. So I can see that,
And there are easy things you can use it for yourself, but then for those tough, difficult long-term problems, it's really helpful to have a therapist or a coach doing it with you.
Yeah. So I know that EFT can be used, obviously, for a multitude of problems, and your website is pretty amazing in the amount of the thorough job that it does of describing all of the various symptoms and disorders, et cetera, that people can use EFT for. It's really amazing to go in there into the different layers in your site. But I was going to ask you, since the theme of my summit is cutting through chaos and reclaiming our power, trying to clear out confusion and chaos, I wonder if you could talk about addictions, which obviously are a major cause of chaos and confusion in people's lives. You know, why people, first of all, people get into addictive behavior to avoid a lot of different things. And I'm wondering, I've seen that you've worked with people with addiction, and I've read about that, and I'm wondering if you could talk about that process and what that could look like from your perspective working with somebody with addiction.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me distinguish between cravings and addictions.
Yeah.
Cravings are when you have an urgent or overwhelming desire for something, and often you give into your cravings. So perhaps you're doing perhaps you're in the presence of people who are eating ice cream, and you really want to eat the ice cream. Or whenever you drive past the ice cream store, you crave ice cream. So that's a craving. Addiction is a long-term pattern of giving in to those cravings. So many of us crave certain things, but we can say no, and we're a choice. We can either have them or not have them. But some people, when they crave things, always give in. And even if that giving, if that thing wrecks their lives, they'll keep on doing it. I've been to some 12-step meetings, and the stories you hear in 12-step meetings are absolutely astonishing. People, I remember one guy who, first of all, was a too talented salesman. He then lost his job because he was drinking on the job. After several warnings, he then lost his job. I had to take a menial job. It then was affecting his relationship with his kids and his wife. She asked him to sober up. He didn't do it, kept on drinking. Eventually, he got divorced. Then eventually, he lost his driver's license. He lost custody of his kids. This whole progression of things. Lost his home. I mean, this whole. It wasn't just one big smash up. It was a series of things. And he kept on going. I met another guy once who was a smoker, and he had lost, he had what's called neuropathy, whereas where the nerves in your limbs, your extremities die. So he'd had to have a leg amputated because of the neuropathy. But he kept on smoking. Then he had to have the other leg amputated. Then he had to have the first leg amputated above the knee, and he kept smoking. When I met him, he was in a wheelchair, obviously couldn't walk, and he was still smoking. The degree of hold cravings can have over people and long-term addictive patterns is astonishing. So EFT is really good with cravings. And once you interrupt that craving many times, you can then change that long-term addictive behavior. In one research project we did with 216 healthcare workers, we found there was a big drop in cravings. So the settings where we had them, they were taking EFT workshops at five different medical conferences, and they were mostly therapists or alternative medicine practitioners, chiropractors, doctors, nurses. We would actually bring in big trays from the hotel of ice cream, cake, candy, cigarettes, alcohol, stuff like that. And we would actually test how strongly they crave things. We would then do EFT with them, and their cravings would be retested. So we test their cravings before and afterwards. But they still were holding that plate of ice cream, whatever it was they craved, in front of them. And we found an amazing thing. We found their cravings dropped by an average of 83%. And the statistical significance of this was such that the results were so strong that there was only one possibility in 10,000 the results were due to chance in that study. So very, very powerful study of how EFT can affect cravings. And a lot of cravings are anxiety. I know I used to smoke, for example, and smoking was just kind of something to do with my hands when I was with company. It was just a way of being with other people and having something to fidget with. So often it's anxiety-driving cravings and long-term addictions. It's not really the craving itself. So EFT addresses that underlying emotion, that underlying anxiety. When you fix that, often the craving just dramatically disappears. Like one woman I worked with had a craving for cinnamon rolls, and we dug into the origins of her craving. It turned out that her grandmother in her childhood had been someone who she felt really loved her. She felt very little love from anyone else around her, her siblings or her parents, but her grandmother really loved her. And they'd go and visit her grandmother, and her grandmother would bake cinnamon rolls. Mm-hmm. And so she had this intense 10 out of 10 craving for cinnamon rolls. We tapped on that craving and also on that memory, that association between being loved by grandma and cinnamon rolls. And what happened then was that the craving went away. She could still remember her grandmother, feel all the love without having to link in her mind or project into those cinnamon rolls that love she'd felt from her grandmother. So EFT is really great at breaking those associations in our minds, breaking those links and helping us then see food just as food. It's no longer this emotionally charged something that we're displacing our unmet emotional needs onto. It's just food. And so that's how EFT works to address cravings and addictions.
Mm. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I heard you, I can't remember, maybe I heard you on a video or maybe your description of working with a child in a clinical setting who was obsessively washing his hands at school and all of that. That was a pretty amazing story of the results from the work that you did with him. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there are several people with obsessions like that or obsessive-compulsive behavior, and there are lots of stories on the EFT Universe website of people who, for example, have had issues like one guy had compulsion to turn a light switch on and off. Every light switch he passed, he'd flip it on and off half a dozen times. Another, several girls had this problem called trichotillomania, where they pull out little chunks of their hair. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of obsessions and compulsions like that. And again, usually there's some kind of emotional cause behind them. Now, usually we dig deep down, Susan. One thing I say in my live workshops is the problem is not the problem. You aren't behaving the way you're behaving for the reason you think you are. So you might come into the office and say, or come into a workshop and say, My husband's the problem. What he does, this drives me crazy. We'll dig down and usually find the reason that your husband's actions drive you crazy is because there is some way in which your brain associates your husband's actions with earlier events. Like one woman was having a lot of marital difficulty, strife with her husband, and one of the things that really annoyed her was they lived on a rural property, and they had a pump and a well, and they would take the dishwater out after they'd used it and just throw it on the garden. They had biodegradable soap, so it didn't really hurt the garden. It was a form of watering the garden. So they just take the dish pan out there and throw it on the garden. And her husband used to usually throw away the sponge along with the dishwater. And this so annoyed her. And she'd remind him about not to do this, but he'd keep on doing it. And so we did some tapping. We found that it wasn't really her husband and the sponge. We found that it was really due to a childhood event where she had seen her father being pretty much an idler and not doing anything and leaving it all up to her mother to do the work. And so she'd had these images from her childhood of how unfair it was that women had to do all the work, mother had to do all the work, and husbands didn't contribute to the load. So she did some tapping on that, and she suddenly burst into tears and said, you know, I'm so hard on my husband for throwing away that dish sponge sometimes, but I'm just realizing now my husband does the dishes all the mm-hmm. time, and he cleans mm-hmm. the house. He does so much to express love and support for me and for our marriage, and that marriage suddenly had a much higher chance of succeeding than before because she was no longer transferring and projecting her old childhood wounds around her father being an idler and making her mom do all the work onto her husband, who actually was doing a lot of the work around the house. All she'd been seeing before was the one flaw. Carl Rogers, the great family therapist, called it finding the blemish. We find the one thing that's bad about the other person, we obsess about that and ignore all their good qualities. And the reason our brains work this way is because when they evolved, when we were growing up 100,000 years ago, 200,000 years ago, as our mammalian brain and our primate brains and then our human brains were evolving, it was crucial for our brains to be able to see problems. Like if there were two, in one of my books I tell the story about two imaginary sisters that lived 100,000 years ago, that lived in the savannah, and they're walking by a patch of grass going down to the water. And one of them notices in the grass the shape of a tiger. So the tiger has the same coloration as the grass, has these black vertical stripes, but the one is really alert and notices the problem, drops her water jug, screams and runs. The other one is slower to notice the tiger, and she gets eaten by the tiger or attacked by the tiger. And so that ability to notice what's wrong was crucial to our evolution. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely vital that our brains pay attention to and notice. And pleasurable experiences aren't that important to the brain. They are not survival experiences. If we happen to sleep on a bed of straw rather than a bed of feathers, then, you know, it's a little more comfortable to have the feathers, that we don't really like the feathers. But it's not a survival matter. So the brain gives that a tiny bit of weight. It gives a lot of weight to what's wrong. So we obsess about what's wrong, and we obsess about what's wrong in ourselves and our partners over and over and over again. So we're highly wired neurologically to focus on the negative and to screen out the positive. So we have a bunch of experiences. We'll remember the negative ones vividly. We'll forget all the positive ones. That's why we are in the habit of doing all this negative thinking, all the self-criticism. And that's where EFT can really help. If we can just get over ourselves, if we can, like this woman with a dish sponge, if she can start to tap away her old childhood associations, then she starts to focus on the good in her husband. When she does that, she realizes, my goodness, I'm in a good marriage. She's not thinking about getting divorced anymore. And she then is coming to the present moment rather than having her whole future hijacked by her past. So that's what EFT can offer people who are couples, people who are in relationships, and people who are in any kind of place where they need to deal with other people and be themselves rather than being taken over by their old habits.
Wow, that's That's a wonderful, wonderful story. I like the image of that. I'll be able to remember it when I find myself focusing on that one small thing that's a little bit agitating. That's powerful. Think about it in that way, in that primal way. Yeah.
One other researcher has done a lot of work on this is John Gottman. He has several best-selling books. He's a psychotherapist, and he says that in relationships we need to have a fairly high ratio of positive to negative experiences. And he says that after studying couples now for 30 years, he can tell within 3 minutes of meeting a couple whether their marriage will succeed or fail. And he says it has to do with the ratio of positive to negative experiences. And he says to succeed, you need about 5 positive ones for every negative one. So for every complaint or every frown, you need about 5 compliments or smiles to counterweigh those. If you have that 5-to-1 ratio or better, you're likely to succeed. But many couples have, 5-to-1 ratio in the other direction. And they don't practice that. In fact, we have a whole online program called Tapping Deep Intimacy, and we have people do this program because we want to reshape the way they relate to other people. And it's powerful when you learn what those negative cues are, and then say, "Oh, it's just the way my brain evolved. It's not me. I don't have to act this way." And you stop then imagining that you have to treat your partner this way. So it's really powerful to apply these things to weight loss, to cravings, to relationships. EFT can help with stress in any of these parts of our lives.
That's interesting. I never really thought about bringing structure to the emotional response like that. I mean, you could, that 5-to-1 ratio, knowing that or just having that in the back of your mind and remembering that when you're in the midst of it all and kind of balance it out in your relationship. That's really wonderful. I'll have to look into that on your website. I hope the listeners will too. That sounds very powerful.
Yeah, and being conscious of that, being really aware of that, because if you know your brain works this way, you then can consciously create positive experiences. You can say, "I'm going to deliberately set out to create a good experience." And when you do that, you can say, "I'm going to create this setting with my kids or with my parents." Or I know when I visit my parents, when I spend time with my kids or my partner, I just deliberately create a whole bunch of positive experiences. It doesn't take a lot. It just takes saying that kind word. It takes smiling when they come in. It takes looking at them and recognizing them. It takes just a little bit of presence. And you start to give people around you that gift of presence, especially in your family. And it really, really can change the whole emotional tone. What I call this the emotional, in the final week of Tapping Deep Intimacy, we call it your emotional ecosystem. And you start to create this positive, beautiful, luscious energy ecosystem throughout your whole relationship life.
Beautiful. I could see, I'm imagining that it could get kind of humorous if you were doing it together and on the same page about it all. Whoops, we need to put a little bit more positive in here. We're weighing in the wrong direction, you know.
Just the ratio.
Yeah. Well, that's really great. I like that a lot. I think I read this on your website when you wrote that you describe EFT and you say that it has the potential to change the entire trajectory of human experience. That's strong. Would you speak more about that and what you mean by that?
We're at a unique moment in history right now, Susan. Think about this. A century ago, let me just have you think back to where we were, 2014, a century ago. 1914 was the start of World War One, the Great War. 1914, interesting things were happening, but one of them was in New York City, and at that time there was a fairly newly created health department, and it was headed up by a female doctor, and she's one of the very first people to graduate with a medical degree. And she had a powerful effect on public health in the city. She also was determined to stamp out typhoid fever. Her father had died of typhoid fever, and she was determined to stamp out typhoid fever, And she did. She had simple remedies, like she would have children's medicines packaged in dose, in vials, in little bottles of the same dose. So when we give them random doses, she helped clean up the milk supply in the city. She helped get them sanitation and clean water. And bit by bit, she made a big difference in public health. And because of her determination and that of her colleagues, they literally stamped out typhoid fever in New York City. They also pretty much eliminated dysentery in New York City as well. And it was estimated in the first year of her work that 1,200 fewer children died of dysentery than before she got going. So big effects in typhoid and dysentery, the major killers of kids back then. In fact, there were such major killers that if you were a child in New York City, your chances of dying before the age of five, your chances of dying were higher than if you were an American soldier fighting in World War I. So wow. American soldiers on the front had better survival ratios than being a kid in New York City. It was that bad. And she stamped out those diseases. Her reforms were copied all over the U.S., eventually all over the world. And now who worries about typhoid? Who worries about diphtheria? Cholera, those diseases are just gone. So we're now at that same cusp a century later, but what we have the tools to do is dramatically reduce the incidence of mental disease. Mm-hmm. And mental health conditions, I'm thinking particularly of phobias, post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, anxiety and depression. If you read the research on EFT, you see that it has a huge effect on those mental health problems. In just one day of EFT sessions, we found in our research that in a one-day workshop, people's average levels of anxiety and depression drop by 45%. That's a huge payoff. If you look at our research into PTSD with veterans, because we've now worked with over 5,000 veterans and their family members offering them EFT, you find that 86% of veterans who get 6 sessions of EFT emerge free of PTSD and are permanently free of PTSD. So what does it mean when we can clean up depression, clean up PTSD, have drastic drops in the amounts of these mental health problems? We're at that level of change in society. So imagine now a society in which public health officials are as passionate about cleaning up, clearing away, reducing the incidence of PTSD, phobias, depression, and anxiety as we were for cholera, diphtheria, typhoid a century ago. We have the tools. We know what to do. We've done the research. We have these evidence-based methods, and they can have this radically improved effect on our mental health as individuals and on the incidence of these mental health problems in society. So that's where we stand now, and it is an incredibly exciting time. If one thing gets me up in the morning, even the most discouraging mornings, it's mm-hmm. knowing we're at that point and we can make a difference in that way. So that's what I apply myself to. And there are discouragements, and things often don't work well. Sometimes things work beautifully. Other times they are really hard to accomplish. But I tell myself we're at this historic moment where we as a society can make this choice to change. If we do, as we do, actually we will do, it's inevitable, we will do this. As we do this, we have a very different future history than we would otherwise have, because people with PTSD produce PTSD in the people around them. There's something called transferred PTSD, where Vietnam mm-hmm. veterans, for example, the spouses of Vietnam veterans start to show the symptoms of PTSD after a few years. So they produce PTSD in their children and their spouses. What happens when we can clear all these PTSD symptoms? Then suddenly we're not transferring those PTSD symptoms to the people around us. So when you stop the pattern, when you say the buck stops here, it stops with my generation, and we change radically as a society. We then don't pass all our trauma on to the next generation. We don't then have to cure the next generation. We don't then have to have the next generation spend years in psychotherapy or perhaps need drugs to get them over their problems. They're launched into life free of all those problems. They then create very different societies. They're not traumatized themselves, so they don't go about traumatizing other people. And the human potential we will unlock in the next decade, I believe, is astounding. I think we'll simply solve many problems we think of as being huge, insoluble, global problems today, we'll solve them because we'll unlock so much human potential that we'll have unimagined abilities to address these global issues.
Wow, that is inspiring. Yeah, and just to think about having that much more calm in the population and just well-being, the ripple effect even in terms of, we're all connected, the environmental effect physically on the earth, it's kind of staggering and amazing to think about what you're talking about and the effect that would have.
It certainly is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world I want to live in.
Yeah, that's the world I want to live in, too. I'm glad you're doing this work. This is profound work. This is great. Well, I would love to give you the opportunity to talk about your book, Genie and Your Genes, for why you were compelled to write it and how have people, particularly those in the traditional medical community, responded to it.
Sure. Genie and Your Genes is my most recent book. I wrote it. I wrote the first draft of it maybe 7 or 8 years ago, but then I revised it. And in the new edition, the paperback edition, there is all this evidence for just how strongly emotions affect genes. And it talks a lot about other aspects of the way we function, our bodies function as well, like the fact that we're energy beings. There's so much of ourselves that's energy and is affected by energy, various kinds of frequencies, various kinds of currents, not the ones you'd think, but really small shifts in energy can produce big changes in our cells. So I talk about us as energy beings. I also talk about us as beings of spirit and beings of emotion and how all of those influences, our emotional health, our spiritual health, has profound effect on our physical health. And I urge people to I tell them to become epigenetic engineers, to actually deliberately use these tools like EFT, like mindfulness, like heart coherence, to shape their own gene expression. They can change the way which genes are expressing. They can change which genes are turned on and off in their bodies. And it turns out these have enormous effects throughout their systems. And in one study by Herbert Benson at Harvard, on the relaxation response, he showed that when people learned the relaxation response, over 1,500 genes changed their expression in the course of 6 weeks. In another study by Dean Ornish, he showed that men with prostate cancer who learned to meditate, who did exercise, who ate a sensible diet, that their degree of gene change, over 500 genes, changed in expression. And the level of expression of harmful genes that we associate with things like breast cancer and prostate cancer went down, whereas genes that are part of our immune response, their expression went up. Over 500 genes changed just by lifestyle. Now, if this were a drug, it would be a miracle drug. It would be malpractice to not prescribe it, you know?
Right. Wow.
Yeah. So I was really motivated, highly motivated, to write about this in the book. So I've captured all of these studies of the book. The book really is also an entertaining book. I wrote it not as like a science textbook, but it is actually used as a textbook for quite a few science courses. But it's really written to be accessible to the everyday person. So it's written in plain, understandable language, and it explains how all this happens and how you can become that epigenetic engineer, take control of your thoughts, and then shift the whole way your body functions.
Oh, that sounds great. I'll have to get a copy of that for sure. Sounds wonderful. Sounds like a great Christmas gift. So speaking of entertaining, I wondered if you could share with us one of the most humorous or touching moments you've had while practicing EFT with somebody.
One of the things I do in sessions, in these live workshops, I don't offer private sessions. I only do large workshops.
Oh, okay, large groups. Uh-huh.
Really, why I train people in EFT, because I want them to learn EFT and take it away and use it in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And laughter is really an integral part of those workshops. Somebody, for example, volunteers to work with me on some life problem they have. like the woman whose husband was throwing away the sponge with water.
Yeah.
They'll volunteer to work with me. They'll sit down, they'll tell me this story, maybe a really tragic story, maybe a life crisis, maybe a real problem. And I'll sit there and, Susan, I love that person, and I will not believe them. Because I know that under that story is an event, probably from their childhood,
mm-hmm.
and that when we tap on that event, that problem is going to go away. And so there's a lot of laughter in my sessions. So they'll be telling me some really, really terrible story about some huge, you know, being bullied or being beaten up or being raped or being or being victimized in some way. And we'll be sitting there, we'll be tapping, and suddenly they will lighten up a little bit, or they will shift to a more detached perspective. That's called a cognitive shift in psychology. And so when there's an opening there, I'll try to introduce laughter. And often by the end of the session, we're sitting there just laughing our heads off. We'll be tapping, and the whole emotional energy of the event will be really light. Maybe they'll be laughing and calling the guy that hurt them a jerk, and you know his you know, it's like one of my favorite lines in these sessions sometimes is that who told you that? Who told you you were worthless? Well, my mother told me I was worthless. Okay, well, you know, how old are you? You're 69. Where is she? She's dead. Okay, so she's dead. And her voice is echoing in your head, telling you you're worthless. And they start to laugh because it's absurd. But we do. You know, we get these scripts installed early in our lives. We
right.
then, like, just a broken record. It just loops over and over and over and over and over again. Again, we pay attention to negative things. So those negative inputs from our childhood keep on blighting our adult lives. And so I'll try to introduce laughter, lightness, self-compassion. The first thing I want people to do is just lighten up on themselves. Like I do a lot of work with people with weight loss, and we have mm-hmm. a whole course called Skinny Jeans, where we an online course, 6-week online course, where we train people to detach those cravings from food. And the very first week, I focus on loving and accepting yourself just the way you are, because people who need to lose weight, they just beat up on themselves. There's this idea
mm-hmm.
that if I just have enough willpower,
mm-hmm.
if I just pull myself together enough, I can make this happen. But of course, we can't. We're being sabotaged, like the cinnamon roll story. We're being sabotaged
by
our childhood experiences. So I have them just say, you know, well, during the 6-week online program, you'll probably fail. Just love yourself. You'll
mm-hmm.
you may binge. You may lapse. Love yourself. You may not lapse. You may be able to stick with your diet and your plan. Love yourself. But whether you stick with it or not, love yourself either way. So a lot of our work is to do with not saying, I love myself after I lose 25 pounds, or
right,
I love
right.
myself after
mm-hmm.
I make another $10,000, or I love myself after I am living with the woman or man of my dreams. We are deferring our happiness constantly in those kinds of ways. I'm urging us to grab it with both hands right now. My biggest problem in my personal life is my email inbox. I'm running, you know, 64 different projects. I have tons to do. I do it fairly well, but often I slip up, or I miss something, or I don't do something. And so for years, I was just dreading sitting down there and turning on the computer and even looking at the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now I sit there and think, you know, maybe I'll do this perfectly today. Maybe I won't do it perfectly. But just love every person that is in there, whether or not you can read their email. So take parts of your life that are stuck, that aren't working, that are difficult, and flood them with love. And that changes your attitude. It may not change external reality, but it may. And there's no harm to changing your internal reality in either way.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like wonderful workshops to go to. And, yeah, so you have a 6-month online course that you offer that people can do?
We have a 6-week weight loss course called Skinny Jeans, and then we have a 12-week relationship online course called Tapping Deep Intimacy. And then we also have many, many live workshops, over 100 live workshops every year, that we have 20 certified trainers, and they offer those workshops.
Oh, sounds great. And all of that, we can go access all of this information on your website, EFT Universe.
It's all on EFT Universe. And if you go to a website called DawsonGift.com, there is a little gift for people there. They can just go to that gift website, DawsonGift.com. They can download a special report on health and abundance, and also the EFT mini manual, And they'll be up and running with EFT in a few minutes after doing that.
And that's great. Yeah, that's the free gift that you're offering for the listeners when they when they join the summit. Yeah, I went in to look at that area. It looks great. And the first gift is called A Being of Spirit in a World of Abundance. That's a wonderful title. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the gifts that I'm speaking to the listeners right now that Dawson is offering. He's talking about going to DawsonGift.com, and he's offering that to all the listeners too. There's a gift in there called entitled "Being of Spirit in the World of Abundance," and it's a compilation of the best new ideas from Andrew Harvey, Ram Dass, Joan Borisenko, Bruce Lipton, Neil Donald Walsh, Gene Shinoda Bolin, and others, and it's edited by Dawson. And then there's also the download of the EFT mini manual for everybody. And I took a look at that this week, and it's got a wealth of information in it. That's great. Thank you so much for that wonderful gift for everybody. So I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with that we haven't talked about yet that you would like to talk about before we close here?
Yeah, I think in closing, what I would say, Susan, is that whatever your reason for deferring the day of your transformation, dump it. Whatever your self-talk about, oh, I'll do this tomorrow. Oh, I'll download the mini manual tomorrow, and I'll try it this weekend. Or, well, I know this might work for other people, but it won't work for me. Or, well, I've tried everything else to lose weight, and nothing else works, so I won't try skinny jeans either. Or, our relationship problems are all my husband's fault, and I'm not going to go do that. Whatever, so you stay stuck and suffering. For goodness sake, don't stay stuck and suffering a moment longer. Much of your suffering is optional. Much of your suffering is just the way you habitually function. It's just you being you. It's you sabotaging yourself. It's you accepting these stories about your own limitation. You're not that limited. You're a being of infinite potential. If you sit down with me at a live workshop, I will see you that way. Other people see you that way. The universe sees you that way as this being of unlimited potential. Just be who you already are. And those stories of limitation, I can't do this because I'm too old, I'm too young, I can't, people from my family have never, people of my gender can't, people of my racial group can't. Whatever your story is, whatever's holding you back, it's just a story, you can change it, and I just urge you to let go of it right now. Today, go there, get that manual, do some tapping, and see your old ideas and worries and stories just crumble away. You don't need them any longer. We need these things when we're young. We built that sense of self. We built those limitations when we were young to protect ourselves. But when you're an adult, you don't need them anymore. And the longer they linger around, the more they blight your life. So I would say whatever your excuse for delaying the day of transformation, dump the excuse. Don't suffer one more day. Don't stay in that old pattern. You deserve a wonderful, empowered, glorious future, and it's right there for you. There's absolutely nothing. All those arguments are lies. They're lies installed by people who didn't like you early on in your life, or people who tried to control you or didn't like themselves. They are nothing that benefits you today. So all of those inner voices that impede you, that give you reasons why I shouldn't just jump in with both feet, just let those go, jump in with both feet, and grab the best life possible you can for yourself today.
Oh, that is a wonderful, wise words for the Inner Warrior Summit. Yeah. Yeah, it's our choice. That's beautiful. Thank you very much. That was great. Wonderful. So I'd like to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a great conversation. I really feel uplifted and excited about learning more about this. I'm very inspired, and I think it's you're a wonderful participator and contributor to the summit to help people just break through and look at where they're sabotaging themselves and really go within and and as you said, seize the power of who we are right now. There's no time to waste. So thank you very much for your voice in all of this. I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
It's been a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. I wanted to just give the listeners your website address again. This is EFT Universe, EFT and then universe.com, and it is a fantastic website. You could be in there for hours and hours and maybe even days looking at all the information in there and all the great experiences that people have had with this work. And also, if you want to look at Dawson's book, he has a website, www.yourgeniusgene.com. That's where your book is where you can learn a lot more about it there. And don't forget to get your free gift that we talked about from www.dawsongift.com. And I think that's all the information I need to give you at this point, except that please come back and listen to our next expert in the next day. That will be great to have you. Thank you for listening today, and please join me again to hear the many more wise voices at the Inner Warrior Summit. I'm wishing you all inner peace, courage, and serenity. So until next time, thank you very much for joining us, and have a wonderful day. Bye.
That was beautiful, Susan. How are you recording the calls?